Hillary Clinton is one step away, and a debate over district representation on Columbus City Council.
From the Battelle Studio at WOSU at Coastside, this is Columbus on the Record. Joining Mike Thompson this week, Jim Siegel, Statehouse reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Chrissy Thompson, politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Mike Gonadakis, Republican strategist.
Welcome to Columbus on the Record. Coming up, a debate on the proposal to break up city council into wards. But first, Hillary Clinton capped her historic effort to become the first woman nominee for president from a major political party. Clinton accepted the nomination Thursday night, capping a spirited Democratic convention during which Democrats tried to unify, but some Bernie Sanders fought back until the end. In her speech, Clinton tried... Okay, we have to stop. Can we boost the audio out here? Kareem, I didn't see Kareem's speech. Was it any good?
I didn't see it either.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I heard it was good. On Twitter, they were saying he did a good job.
I heard him speak, but I had it on mute.
I heard he came out and said, "Hi, I'm Michael Jordan." And then he said, "Don't worry, Trump doesn't know the difference."
Really? Is that what he said?
From the Battelle Studio at WOSU at Coastside, this is Columbus.
That's funny.
I did not see the Muslim dad.
I didn't see that either.
I have it.
Did you see
that?
Yes. That was a hell of a speech.
You could tell while he was speaking that it was. I don't know if that was.
Just destroyed.
Fox covered it, apparently. Fox covered it.
It was on the homepage of CNN for most of the day.
So you mean
today.
As in, yeah.
They didn't show it live. Fox News. That's what I saw on Twitter, anyway.
It wasn't in prime time.
I know. It's hard to.
It's tough to know. Yeah. Sherrod Brown wasn't on. What I was watching.
It was he was on PBS.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying, Sherrod Brown. I follow you and I read all your stuff.
Hillary Clinton is one step away, and a debate over district representation on Columbus City Council.
From the Battelle Studio at WOSU at Coastside, this is Columbus on the Record. Joining Mike Thompson this week, Jim Siegel, Statehouse reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Chrissy Thompson, politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Mike Gonadakis, Republican strategist.
Welcome to Columbus on the Record. Coming up, a debate on the proposal to break up council into wards. But first, Hillary Clinton capped her historic effort to become the first woman nominee for president from a major political party. Clinton accepted the nomination Thursday night, capping a spirited Democratic convention during which Democrats tried to unify, but some Bernie Sanders supporters fought back until the end. In her speech, Clinton tried to show a softer side, tried to marginalize her opponent, and tried to convince voters she was a unifying force for change.
So, enough with the bigotry and the bombast. Donald Trump's not offering real change. He's offering empty promises. And what are we offering? A bold agenda to improve the lives of people across our country, to keep you safe, to get you good jobs, to give your kids the opportunities they deserve.
Chrissy Thompson, did Democrats achieve what they wanted to in this convention?
I think ultimately they did, as far as allowing some of these Bernie Sanders supporters time to grieve, to move on. Most of them by the end of the convention were more or less on board with Hillary Clinton. There were some flare-ups in the speech where some folks would start to heckle or yell, and that's when you would hear that Hillary, Hillary chant. Yeah. As far as kind of bringing the rest of the country on board, Hillary Clinton tried to do a lot of things in her speech where she tried to reach out to progressives. She tried to reach out to disaffected Republicans who don't like Donald Trump. And I think it had probably mixed success. So these next few months are going to be really crucial to doing that.
Jim, what did you make of the – she's so well known, but they seem to be trying to reintroduce her. What'd you make of that?
I mean – those who already have formed a solid opinion about Hillary Clinton, I doubt we're going to change their opinion much based on what they saw. I mean, one of her problems has been that she seems too contrived, too scripted all the time. Everything is very carefully planned out. I mean, she hasn't held a press conference for more than 230 days at this point, which, I'm sorry, is ridiculous for anyone running for president. I don't know that she changed many minds on that. She may have softened her image up in the eyes of some independents and some who don't pay a lot of close attention to politics. I do think it probably, you know, maybe went on a little too long. I think after her daughter did the introduction, then they did the video, then she started to explain it again. It was like, okay, we get it. You're human. You've got a soft side. But like Chris said, I think it could have had an effect. I think the entire convention probably did a lot for the party, in that the Republicans allowed them to grab the mantle of so many different things, of patriotism. Who would have thought that now the Democrats would be the ones standing out there waving the flags at their convention, instead of the Republicans?
You saw the Republicans. The Republican convention was an angry convention. Lock her up, all that chanting. The Democratic convention, agree or disagree, was largely a more positive tone.
Respectfully, Mike, you know I have a ton of respect for you. I was on the floor of the convention, Republican convention. It wasn't an angry convention at all. As a matter of fact, lock her up was something that you heard from thousands of Bernie supporters. We call them Bernie supporters. It's actually the liberal base of the party.
I don't think they were trying to lock her up.
Oh, absolutely they were. You can just see all the videos on Twitter and Facebook to see that. So there was many things said. There was a lot of things. And I think you tweeted out that why isn't the media showing all the protesters inside the arena for the Democrats the way they did for the Republicans? So at the end of the day, the less than 10% of American population that tuned in to watch both the Democrat and the Republican conventions, what they saw, at least on the Democrat side, was a hot mess, because you would have Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders saying, the system's corrupt, everything's broke, Wall Street's terrible, but Hillary Clinton is the number one recipient of Wall Street money. And then you had unelected First Lady, who did the best. She gave the best speech of everyone, unelected.
Michelle Obama,
I apologize. But even the president stood up and said, everything's great. But then the night before, Bernie Sanders said, everything's terrible. Elizabeth Warren said everything's terrible. So what is it? You know, are we going to continue the Obama policies with 50 million people on food stamps now? Or is she a change agent like her husband said, Bill Clinton? There's too many mixed messages going on.
Chrissy, what about the Hillary Clinton sell herself in this speech? She really did not have the best speech of the convention. That belonged to Michelle Obama, President Obama, Joe Biden, and President Clinton, of course. Did she do enough last night to sell some skeptical folks?
Yeah, you know, I thought that the overall convention did a better job of selling the party, of selling the message, and even of selling Hillary Clinton from people who have personal relationships with her than her speech did. It had some really strong moments. Those were mostly, in my opinion, in the first half of the speech, and I thought it did go on pretty long. There were moments of the speech, and she struggles with some of her oratory. And there are moments in the speech that she really seemed to connect with the cameras, which is largely the audience, right? Yeah. The people in that room are going to vote for her. So she really seemed to connect in some parts. In other parts, it's still this, you know, even how robotic the statement of a lot of people don't quite get me, and I understand that, you know. So she needs to work on that.
Let's get to we mentioned the Bernie supporters, and Bernie Sanders supporters were heard throughout the convention. They walked out of the convention, and they interrupted speakers. Let's take a listen to one woman here who was a Bernie supporter.
We don't believe that Clinton is a true Democrat. We don't think she really believes in a true democracy. You count every vote in every state, and you make sure they all have every right to vote in every single way. She doesn't care about that. She has taken away our votes and our voice. We're making sure we're heard.
I suppose it wouldn't hurt to mention that Bernie Sanders isn't a Democrat either. He's an independent, Jim. But there's anger there.
There's anger.
Yeah. Is it how many? She's
words.
Not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I'm with great confidence she's not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But how many Bernie supporters are like her, do you think?
Well, Hillary Clinton better hope there aren't many like that, which folks who are just outraged and saying, just spouting off. I'm not sure that there was a whole lot of basis behind what she was saying, but she was certainly angry about it. Bernie Sanders lost. He had far fewer votes. He had far fewer delegates at the end of the day, and that's how the system works. I mean, you may not like the results, but you got to deal with it. Yeah. Now, there's been some polls showing that most Bernie Sanders supporters are coming over to Hillary Clinton's side. I think if you add in maybe like a Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, I think some may peel off to her.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it still remains to be seen if there's still some fracturing there.
We're going to get to Hillary's competitor. Donald Trump continues to make controversial statements that energize his core supporters, anger his opponents, and raise questions among the undecided. This week, he seemed to encourage Russia to hack into Hillary Clinton's email.
I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens.
Mike Anadakis, let's say one thing up front. Hillary Clinton started this. She admits she was wrong to put the email server in her basement. The FBI says she was wrong to put the email server in her basement. So we'll put that aside. Was Donald Trump wrong to encourage Russia to hack her emails?
Yes, of course he was. But at the end of the day, if those emails only consist about her yoga classes and her daughter's wedding, who cares, right? That's what she claims.
He is a candidate for president encouraging espionage on the part of a superpower. What does that say about his fitness to rule?
Hey, look, this is a new world. We live in a new country. Anything he says, it doesn't matter. He's winning in all the polls right now. The crystal ball report that just came out has him winning the election. Okay, so the crazy things that come out of his mouth actually help him. I'm telling you right now, Donald Trump is going to win this election.
But my theory is each thing he says ticks off a small percentage of undecideds, Chrissy. I mean, it's not one thing that's going to doom him, but it's a cumulative effect that could have an effect on the election.
I think you're right. I think that a lot of the news that has come out over the last week and a half is a drip, drip, drip of ticking off undecided voters against Hillary Clinton as well. And so we're going to see one of two things, in my opinion. We're going to see really low turnout. Everyone's just really fed up with both of these candidates. The majority of Americans don't like either of them. Or we're going to see crazy high turnout and people are really going to make a decision. And in that case, I don't think we have any idea who's going to win.
I think Clinton's effort was to try to say, look, I'm the steady hand at the wheel. I'm not the one who's going to go off. I think one of her best lines in her speech was when she said, a man you can bait with a tweet is not a man you can trust with nuclear weapons. I think that was a good line. And I think that's going to be, you know, his temperament is going to be a big part of this debate.
Right. Let's get to our off-the-record final parting shots for this section of the program. Mike Anadakis, you're up first.
I think you've seen the coming-out party for Nina Turner. I think she's going to be a force to be reckoned with in Ohio. It's going to wreck Chairman David Pepper's plans for what he wants to do in 2018. But watch for Nina Turner to run for governor.
Chrissy.
Well, I just wanted to say also about Nina Turner that there are some members of the party who are really ticked off at the amount of attention she's gotten this week and what she may just have hurt herself and ended her political career as well. So we'll see.
Interesting. And Jim?
I think this Trump-Russia connection is going to continue to fester as a story. There's a lot there in terms of his relationships with people who are very close to Vladimir Putin.
Okay. And Ted Strickland did not speak at the Democratic convention. Of course, Rob Portman did not speak at the Republican convention. I think it just symbolizes the fear they have of being linked to the candidates at the tops of their tickets. So, next up on Columbus on the Record, a debate over district representation on Columbus City Council. Tuesday, Columbus voters will decide whether to enact a major change to the way Columbus is governed. Issue 1 would change Columbus City Council from 7 members, each elected at large or citywide, to a council of 13 members, with 10 members elected by districts in the city and 3 elected at large. Here to debate this issue is Whitney Smith of Represent Columbus. and James Ragland of One Columbus, which opposes the district system. Let's start with you, Whitney. By most measures, Columbus is doing pretty well. Population is growing, unemployment is low, downtown is doing well. Neighborhoods are starting to come back, neighborhoods like Franklinton. There's been some improvements in neighborhoods like King Lincoln. City leaders deserve credit for this. If it's not broken, why should we fix it?
Well, the real heart of the issue is representation and neighborhood representation. So right now, with an at-large system, neighborhoods really don't have a voice. And we've talked to 39,000 people in the city of Columbus to get this issue on the ballot, all of whom thought it was necessary for us to bring this to a vote to really give neighborhoods a voice and the representation we need. Columbus is one of the top 25 largest cities in the United States, and it's the only one that does not have district representation.
James, there are some parts of the city that feel they have been left behind, that haven't gotten the attention that downtown in particular and the Short North have received. Wouldn't district representation give those parts of the city voice and they can get some help down there?
Not necessarily. I think when you look at the details of issue one, districts are to be drawn by representation of 85,000 members in one particular district. The bottom line with this is currently all Columbus residents vote on all seven members of Columbus City Council. If issue one passes, they'll only be able to vote on four representatives. Now, that I don't believe is more representation. I believe that that's decreased representation.
But if you look at where the city council now resides, two are in Victorian Village, three on the Far East Side, one in Clintonville, and one on the South Side.
True.
There is not one member of city council west of Route 315. How is that side of the city represented?
Well, I'd want to know when's the last time from someone west of 315 actually ran for Columbus City Council.
Isn't the system set up where it's hard for those folks to run because they need a lot of money?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Someone from the hilltop can go and get petitions and run for city council or run for the mayor just like I did. I'm not rich at all. I didn't have a lot of corporate backing at all, but I was able to get the people in my community to surround me and go out and get those petitions, and it didn't cost us a lot to be able to get on the ballot.
You got on the ballot, but you didn't even come close.
Sure, but the issue is I ran, and what we're asking right now is whether or not a change in Columbus City Council structure allows you to run as easily as it does with the ward system as you can with an at-large system like we have right now. And studies show that that's not necessarily true. If you look at Austin, if you look at Seattle, it infused more money into politics. It infused more money into the council races than what they've had in recent history.
85,000 people, Whitney. That's the size of Dublin, Worthington, Whitehall, and Bexley combined. One person can represent all those people?
Well, right now, the current city council, seven people represent over 800,000 people. So when we're talking about this issue, we really need to talk to neighborhoods and people and your neighbors. So what we have done is we have done that. We said, do you even know who these seven people are that represent you? Have they ever walked in your neighborhood? Do you feel like you can talk to them? And that answer is no. So district representation and neighborhood representation gives people, when they have an issue, to say, I have a specific person that knows me, that's from my area, that I can talk to. Right now, seven people at large to represent 800,000 people, and it's a part-time job. I mean, that doesn't even seem fair to them.
Getting to the makeup of the council under your proposal, which the issue voters will decide, we go from 7 to 13, but 10 are now would be district representations and 3 at large. Doesn't yours go too far the other way in that it's going to lead to provincialism, not in my backyard politics, maybe some horse trading between neighborhoods? Don't we run the risk of that with going too far the other way?
I think right now the biggest problem we have at City Council is the lack of different points of view, the lack of different sides. Right now, if you go to a City Council meeting like I have been to many, everybody votes the same way. It's a groupthink. They all vote yes every time. Most recently, we've seen them all vote to buy a $10 million parking garage for their sole use that they also put a gym in it. If we had different neighborhoods represented and really had a voice, neighborhoods that needed fire equipment or basic necessities could have spoken up and said, hey, you know, that parking garage is great for you guys, but we have a neighborhood over here that has real needs. So I think a healthy debate and hearing different sides is really the fundamental importance of a democracy and representation.
James, when was the last time we heard the phrase, a divided city council voted blank? It's always unanimous.
I'm not sure when the last time is that we've heard that. I think what people are looking for right now is effectiveness. The real issue is not whether or not we're going to have bedlam at city council because people are voting against particular initiatives. They want to see a city council that's devoted to providing equity and resources to their community. And where I would disagree with Whitney on what she said, we've got the most diverse city council that we've had in recent history here in the city of Columbus. Are we going to have every neighborhood represented on city council all at one time? Absolutely not.
Whitney, what about the map? Shouldn't voters know where they're going to be before they decide on this new system?
I think a map is really, really important. There's no map in the United States Constitution, and there doesn't belong a map in the charter either. I think the biggest problem, we're getting hung up on the map and what's the map going to look like, but it's standard practice for a map not to be included. And the fact is, the last people we want drawing the map are politicians, are people that work for the city. And that's why this proposal calls for the people that do decide on the map to not work for the city, not be a lobbyist, and not be an elected official. Because I think when you talk about gerrymandering and map issues, that's when a map is already created and trying to be push a specific map with a specific agenda on people.
But to be clear, your commission that would draw is three appointed by the mayor, three appointed by the council. There's at least one of those three comes from a minority party or a party not on city council, Republicans right now, and then those six would pick the other three, which again would include a minority party member.
Yes, so nine people.
Let's get to the cost of running an election. If a district is $85,000 in Austin, Texas, which recently went to an all-district city council, they did not see the spending go down in their first election. What guarantees do you have that you're still not going to need a lot of money to run a council campaign in Columbus?
Well, we don't have any guarantees. And I think campaign finance reform would be a great charter amendment as well to make after this. And many times when this has been proposed in the past, it was linked with that as well. However, according to the law, we can only be a single item charter amendment. So while we would like to tackle a lot of issues like campaign finance, the appointment process, just to name a few, we were only allowed to tackle this one issue. But I can tell you, common sense, when you're running a campaign with 800,000 people citywide, just common sense tells you that's going to cost a lot more.
Wouldn't it be easier for somebody, you mentioned the Hilltop, how nobody from the Hilltop has run for city council, or very few have. Wouldn't it be easier for somebody from the Hilltop to try to win over a majority of 85,000 residents rather than 800,000?
Well, I think what we need to really focus on is whether or not implementing that will be a value add to the Hilltop. And I think what the mayor and what council has done is they've initiated a charter review committee that will address those things, including the public in the discussion up front. A part of the problem of what we have with issue one right now is the fact that there is no map. Seattle had a map and they voted on a map. And so, you know, there is a map of the United States of America. And I want to really know what my ward map is going to look like. They did this.
What's this commission going to look like? Who's going to be on this mayor's commission that's going to review the council?
Well, we don't know yet, but anyone who's a resident of the city of Columbus can apply to be a part of this. And so the mayor and council are going to
pick. Do you know how large it's going to be?
It's going to be seven members.
Seven members.
And it will be picked. By whom? By the mayor and city council.
Okay.
And they'll pick those seven members, and then they'll proceed to go out to the community and get the community's input on what they want to see with a modernization of Columbus City Council. Do you want expansion? Well, then tell us what you would like to see. Tell us your appetite for the budget needs regarding that. And so I think that's a more responsible approach.
I would love to address that. When we talk about this commission, it's really a political tactic. There are no teeth to this commission. It was only brought up to combat and help suppress the vote on August 2nd. And this commission, I highly doubt that is going to talk to 39,000 people that we talked to that signed the petition to get this on the ballot. So let's be real when we talk about this commission. It's really a political tactic to suppress the vote, as we have seen repeatedly in this special election.
Well, I would consider a political tactic to suppress the vote putting this on in August.
That's an interesting point.
Let's really talk about what a political tactic is here.
Well,
you put it on in August in advance of the biggest election in the history of the United States because you want a depressed voter turnout.
I recall in 2009 that there was an August election supported by Andrew Ginther and members of the city council and the mayor.
Absolutely.
That raised the city income tax by 25%.
And it was a necessity.
Where was the call to delay that to November?
That was done well in advance of the August election.
It was still an August election.
It was still an August election, but we spent a year advocating for that tax increase. The voters knew.
So why not 3 more months to get it on November?
Well, it was necessary because we needed to know what we were going to be dealing with in advance of a budget process in November.
To the politics of city council, the last time a Republican was elected or left city council was 2002. The last Republican mayor left City Hall in 2000. Isn't this just a case, you're Republican, isn't this just a case Republicans can't win under the current rules, so let's change them?
By no means is this a Republican-led initiative. This initiative has been led for 5 years by Jonathan Beard, a Democrat Central Committee member. He has been the backbone of this. I've been working with him just only a year on this. And while Republicans do support this under the form of good government, they have repeatedly publicly acknowledged that this is actually a Democrat-led movement, and they agree with it under the form of representation is needed in this city.
To the cost, the opponents of Issue 1, James, have said this is basically going to cost an extra $2 million a year. You've said that there'll be salaries of $80,000, which is only half true. It's like a $45,000 salary, roughly, and then benefits and pension.
Sure.
So, but let's get back to the $2 million a year. It's an $800 million budget. That's less than 0.25% of the city budget. If it gives better representation, isn't that money worth it?
Well, we don't feel it gives better representation. And we would have to cut some things in order to include that into the budget. And so
0.25%.
We would still have to make some cuts to some programs and to some things within that city budget.
Yeah, well, let's just put it in perspective. Wendy mentioned the $10 million parking garage. The city of council just approved a $13 million tax abatement for big lots to move across town. It can't absorb $2 million a year? We're giving away those types of
things? We're not saying that it can't absorb it. What we're saying is the people have an opportunity through the Charter Review Commission to weigh in on that.
James, I want to get to a campaign tactic that I've just noticed in the past week or so. It involves race. The TV and ad flyer that you've been running, the opponents have been running, show a sort of a montage of 25 member council, which would be the ultimate size of the council if we doubled in size of population. But all of the people you represent are white males with cufflinks and fancy shoes and watches. So that might cause attention for African Americans who now have a majority on council. Your campaign manager, Brian Clark, at the Metropolitan Club, drew a hypothetical district that ran from Clintonville to Milo Grogan to Wyland Park and said that someone in Clintonville might be represented from someone from Wyland Park, a largely black neighborhood. Are those subtle racial cues that you're using in your campaign?
That's not subtle. That is the way that this has been drawn up through Issue 1.
There's no map, so you said there's no map. So how can you say that someone from Clintonville is going to be represented by Wyland Park?
We're saying it's uncertain. We didn't say that that is going to be the actual ward. We're saying you don't know what the ward is right now, and you definitely don't have an opportunity to vote on that. African Americans have been disenfranchised by maps through time immemorial. If you look at what gerrymandering has done, if you look at what redlining has done to the African American community, we cannot be certain that we are going to be fairly represented through this process. And so if there is uncertainty, you vote Issue 1 down right now, and you get behind this Charter Review Commission that's going to go out to your community and get your input.
So you're not telling subtly someone from Clintonville that you could have a African-American representative on council?
I'm asking them to read the language and know that that could be a possibility.
What about this issue of gerrymandering, Wendy? Whitney. This could happen. It very much could happen. It could be districts carved out, like we've seen with the State House and Congress.
Yeah, gerrymandering is always a possibility, and that's really why we took the district lines and the drawing of district lines out of the hands of politicians, because that's when we really see gerrymandering at its worst.
In the actual ballot language, in the petition language itself, it says the mayor and council pulls the people who draw the map.
Thank you very much, Whitney Smith, James Raglan. Voters, go to the polls on Tuesday, Columbus voters, and decide this issue for yourself, even if you're on vacation. Send an absentee ballot in. The entire debate was longer than this. We have put an edited version on television, but the full debate is available at our website, WOSU.org, and we'll push it out on the Columbus on the Record Facebook page as well. That is Columbus on the Record for this week. Check us out online. For our debaters here and our crew, I'm Mike Thompson. Have a good week.